It's one thing to do B2B SEO and get more website traffic. It's another thing to do B2B SEO and get more conversions. But it's a whole ninja thing to get B2B SEO turning into highly qualified leads. And that's exactly what we're going to be talking about today. And by the way, if you're listening to this and you're not B2B, this stuff also works for B2C businesses that have either a long sales cycle or sell to a knowledgeable audience. Let's go.
Welcome to the Exposure Ninja Digital Marketing Podcast.
Welcome to the Exposure Ninja Digital Marketing Podcast. My name's Tim Cameron Kitchen. I'm the founder of Exposure Ninja. We're a digital marketing agency that help our clients get more leads and sales through their websites. And that's exactly what this podcast is all about. Today, we're talking about how to get SEO B2B working for high qualified leads. I said that really poorly. Basically, how to get really highly qualified leads through B2B SEO. And you've probably never heard a B2B SEO podcast before in audio form, but we're going to make it work. By the way, if you want to watch the video version of this, you can head over to our YouTube channel. Just go on YouTube and search for Exposure Ninja. How is SEO different for B2B rather than B2C though? Well, firstly, there's usually a much longer sales cycle. B2C customers can have a sales cycle as short as 5 minutes, you know, think, search, click, buy. But according to a study by SuperOffice, 75% of B2Bs have a sales cycle of at least 4 months. This means, of course, loads of digital marketing touch points along the way, if you're doing it right. So whoever at the business is in charge of finding a solution to the problem is going to be doing lots of research into your products and service. And we're going to talk today about some of the content strategies that you might want to include in your SEO to make sure that you're getting in front of them at various stages during that journey. There's also going to be a lot of different searches that are happening, potentially from different people inside the organization at different seniority and expert levels. So we need to make sure that we're catering for all of those. Then, of course, you have some quite B2B specific SEO tactics that you can use. For example, the comparison and alternative searches. So I'm on the HubSpot website now on a page called Salesforce Sales Cloud versus HubSpot Sales Hub. And this page is designed by HubSpot to target phrases like Salesforce Sales Cloud alternative and Salesforce Sales versus HubSpot Sales. So some of these you'll often see in B2B, particularly in software, where people search for alternatives if they don't like the pricing or whatever. And then there's an opportunity to get some ranking for content for those searches and pitch you against whatever competitor people are comparing against. We're going to explore content in a bit more detail later on. But another way that B2B SEO is different to B2C is exactly what we said just a minute ago about the person doing the research might not always be the end user or decision maker. Sometimes they're someone a bit more junior. They may be doing the research before handing their sort of their long list or their short list of options over to the end users to review, and then maybe to decision makers to, you know, do the decision thing. Now, of course, this means that when we're doing SEO, whether it's the keyword research or the content, we need to make sure that we're targeting and accessible to multiple levels of knowledge. The researcher is going to likely have maybe a lower level of knowledge compared to the end user, and the decision maker might have a level of knowledge that's sort of in between. Their searches and the content that they need to see will reflect this. So this sort of means that we've got to cater for these different types of audience in the content and in the keyword research that we're doing for B2B. Now, one common mistake, which we'll cover in a bit, is that businesses can often pitch their content at too much of an entry level. They'll just target the people who are doing the initial research, and because it'll be too entry level, they won't have the credibility and the expertise needed to actually persuade the decision makers and the end user. So what we're not saying here is that you just need to target your content at a real basic entry level, because once the researcher has shared their findings with other people in the organization, those end users or decision makers are likely going to want to do their own research. So we need to make sure we've got content that targets their levels as well. Let's just give a very, very quick example. So let's say that I'm looking for some software to manage my team, right? And let's say that I'm looking for sort of employee engagement software. I want to make sure that my team are happy, and I want to make sure that I'm offering them the benefits that mean the most to them. Now, if I give this to someone to go and research, they might be searching for things like HR software, right? And if you have a look on Google for HR software, you'll see it's a real broad range of different types of software. So we've got some sort of accounting type software that's just designed to manage payroll. We've got some employee engagement software and kind of everything in between. So that's a very broad term, a very competitive term, and probably the intent on that term isn't so high. Whereas if we think about a search term like, employee engagement software, that's going to have a much lower search volume, a much higher intent, and it's also going to be targeted towards a potential customer that knows what they're looking for much better. So we actually, as an SEO exercise, we need to think about these different potential journeys that types of customers are going to go on in the same organization. So that's a consideration that we're going to have to keep in mind as we go through the different phases of this. So let's start with improving your SEO. And obviously improving your SEO, we need to start by making sure we've got the foundations in place. Most of the time when we start an SEO campaign, keyword research, it happens fairly early on for very good reason, because keyword research kind of identifies the phrases that we're going after, the phrase that we want to rank, and also allows us to map the keywords that we're targeting to different pages on the site, to see if we need to be adding more pages, and to analyze the content that's already on the site to see if we need to add or change or optimize the existing content that's there. Now, keyword research can be, you can spend 2 minutes on keyword research, or you can spend 6 months on keyword research. Probably the right approach is somewhere in the middle, probably closer to the 2 minutes, to be honest. But anybody can do keyword research. If you're really qualified clients to come in through your B2B SEO, though, you need to take the keyword research up a level. Your keywords need to be the sort of phrases that high quality leads are searching for. And these phrases aren't always going to be the ones that are generating the most traffic. They're not going to be the ones necessarily with the highest search volume. Remember, traffic doesn't equal conversions. And even if it does, those conversions don't necessarily equal highly qualified, banned qualified B2B leads. So we need to make sure that we're absolutely bang on with exactly what our target audience is looking for. Going back to our HR software versus our employee engagement software example. Now, employee engagement software is going to have a much lower search volume. It's going to have much lower CPCs than something like HR software, which is going to have higher search volume and higher CPCs because it's broader and more competitive. But if we had to prioritize targeting one or the other, if we're an employee engagement software business, we're probably going to go after the longer tail, the less competitive, and the higher commercial intent term first. That's not to say we're not going to go after HR software at all. We will, but we need to make sure we're getting some traction, we're getting leads, and we're getting good quality traffic through to the site first. Then we can expand by targeting some of these broader terms. I think it's a very common mistake to go straight after the highest search volume, most competitive phrases, just assuming that they're going to be the biggest and the most productive for us. Particularly if you're looking at some of your competitors and they're ranking well for these phrases, you think, well, that's what I need to be doing as well. Whereas often actually it can make sense to pick off some of the lower hanging fruit that actually might be more valuable as well. Now, if you're not sure where to get started with your keywords, it's a really good idea to take the time to speak to your sales team and your customers to see what terminology they use. There can often be a real disconnect, and we've experienced this as an agency of clients where there is a disconnect between the phrases and the language that the sales team use and that the product team use, or that the delivery team use in B2Bs, because the delivery team, high level of expertise, often highly technical, the sales team, less so. But actually, who's right when we're talking about marketing phrases that we need to be targeting? Actually, it's often the sales team, because they're used to talking to the customers all day long. They know the phrases and the words that their customers are using. So often, it's actually the sales team whose insight we want here. Sorry, product teams. Also, another thing to touch on with B2B, with keyword research, it feels like new terms and acronyms are appearing all the time, and it can be quite difficult to keep up. Now, one danger with B2B SEO is that sometimes people focus too much on niche terminology that actually doesn't have a lot of search volume and really doesn't have a lot of recognition outside the businesses serving this niche. I'll give you an example from the very early days of my work in SEO. This is when I was still doing SEO campaigns myself in Exposure Ninja about a decade ago. We worked with a client that they had massage people that went into companies and to give the staff massages. Now, in the industry, this is called on-site massage. And when we spoke to the client, they said, we want to rank for on-site massage. That is the keyword. That is the one that our industry uses. That's it for us. If we can get ranked there, happy days. So lo and behold, we got them ranked top of Google for on-site massage. We saw the traffic coming through, but the conversions just weren't there. So at this point, we're thinking, wait, hold on, what's wrong here? How come we got this large volume of traffic, but we're just not getting the conversions? Anyway, it turns out that on-site massage is a phrase used by their industry, i.e. the massage companies. And the search volume is them all Googling each other to see where they rank. But actually, their customers, that's not the phrase that they're using at all. These days, we ask those sort of questions up front before we get the client's ranking. But you can see from that example how important it is to make sure that you're actually aligned with the phrases that your customers are searching for. We also need to think about the search intent with these new and existing keywords that we're targeting. And the best way to describe this is to sort of talk you through an example. Let's say that we're an accounting firm and we are an accounting firm for self-employed people, right? So for freelancers and people who run their own businesses. Now, what we might do is we might have a piece of top of funnel content. I'm looking at one now, which is called an employed and self-employed tax calculator. And this ranks for the search term self-employed take-home pay calculator. So if we think about the strategy here, what this business is doing is targeting self-employed people, and they've produced a calculator that self-employed people can use to work out what their take-home pay would be. Now, somebody's searching for that. Does that mean that they're a potential accounting business client? Not necessarily. It certainly doesn't mean that they're in desperate pain now. They're trying to work out what their take-home pay would be. They might even still be in a job. They might be looking at setting up their own business. You know, there's loads of possible reasons that someone would search for this that means that they don't need an accountant. So this is a very top of funnel phrase. It's going to have a low conversion rate. It's going to have low commercial intent. But it might still be the person that's worth targeting, because a percentage of these people will go on to need an accountant at some point. So if you're going to be doing this, you need to make sure that you have a call to action and that you have content that's relevant for that type of person. So if you're going to have a self-employed tax calculator and, you know, your call to action is become a client of our accounting firm, you're probably going to have a sad time. What you want to do instead is have a lower commitment CTA that might be something like, you know, download the guide to becoming self-employed, or download this guide to making your self-employed taxes easy, or something like that. So you're relevant for the intent and the stage that this visitor is at. If we think about another term searched by a similar type of customer, how to do a self-employed tax return. This is a very different term, because this is someone who is now in the process of doing their tax return. They probably don't want to do it. They're probably about to have a really sad time doing this thing. And if you're an accounting firm that does self-employed tax returns, this is exactly the sort of phrase that you want to target. Now, it's not as commercial intent as, you know, tax return accountant for self-employed, where someone's actually searching for a tax return. But this is someone who is at least searching for the very problem that this business solves, okay? So we can see that there's a different intent there, and we need to make sure that the content and the CTAs in this article match the intent of the user. Of course, they're only going to convert if we have good CTAs, you know, full stop. What you can't do is just publish this information and just hope that magically people get in contact and become clients. That's generally a pretty bad strategy and can lead to some super low conversion rates. One of the best approaches can actually be to embed CTAs throughout your content. I'm on a page here on the Crunch website, which is another accounting firm website, just keeping it in this space. They've got a piece of content that's written, what is a partnership tax return? Form SA800 explained. Okay, so this is very clearly targeting the phrases partnership tax return and form SA800, which is a technical term, I'm assuming, for this type of tax return. This knowledge base post is pretty good. It's nice and detailed. It explains exactly what it is. But the main reason I love this is, well, there's actually two reasons. Firstly, there is a CTA embedded throughout this post. If you've missed the deadline return, you can file your tax return, and there's a CTA that's sort of embedded. Find out more. You can click on it and find out more. The other reason I really love this page is that they've actually offered a fixed price product for this service, right? So people who need this thing can actually have a really simple fixed price, which, if you think about generating qualified leads, having a fixed price and being clear about that price up front can be one way to make sure that your leads are really highly qualified, because you've already dequalified or disqualified anyone who that price point is either too low or even too high. So I love this page. And if you want to go and watch the YouTube version of this podcast, then you'll be able to see that page as well. Matching the searcher's intent like this, though, where we make sure that we're writing content and including CTAs that make sense for where the person is at, given the phrase that they've searched for, can be a fantastic way of keeping people on the page longer. Nothing is more of a turnoff than if you're searching for something like how to do a self-employed tax return, and you know that the whole thing starts with, here's what a self-employed tax return is, and here's the history of the world, and here's what tax means. And you know, you have to dig through all of that rubbish to get through to the information that you actually want. Likewise, another thing that's a massive turnoff, you search for how to do a self-employed tax return and it goes straight into like really technical detail, or it's pitched way above your head. So we need to make sure that it makes sense for the audience. This is going to keep them on the page longer, which is obviously going to give Google some positive indicators when it's thinking about how helpful this content might be to users. And one of the things that we do frequently with clients is we go and find these types of pages that they already have on their websites that maybe aren't performing as well as they could. And we do something called an SEO page boost, where we check the intent, we check the content, we check the CTAs, we tweak and optimize these. And sometimes, you know, in one case for a healthcare client, we got 100% increase in contact form submissions for two of their key treatment pages just by doing this. So we didn't have to rewrite the pages. We just needed to tweak them a little bit because maybe the intent was slightly off or the CTAs didn't match that intent. Now, we've talked a bit about how content impacts SEO. We're going to go into a little bit more detail about content. But before we do that, if you want some help with any of this, if you're thinking, yeah, do you know what? Some of this sounds like a familiar problem for us. We could do with getting higher quality leads through our SEO, whether or not you're B2B or B2C, then you can request a free website and marketing review from the team here at Exposure Ninja. There's just a short form to fill out to see if you qualify. And then if you do, we'll record you a video based on your website, your ad campaigns, your ranking. We'll show you the opportunities that you've got to increase your ranking and also improve the quality of the traffic that you're getting. And we'll also take a look at your website from a conversion perspective, suggesting ways that you can improve the lead volume that you're getting. All you need to do to get request this is to go to exposureninja.com/review. And by the way, if you've heard me mention this a few times, but you still haven't done it, go and do it. I promise you, it's one of the best things that you can do. These reviews are incredible. The team who do these have done hundreds. I would guess that some of them have done thousands of these reviews now. And it's very unlikely. They've probably analyzed your competitors, right? So they know these types of businesses and they can give you some great recommendations on how to improve your results. So go to exposureninja.com/review to request your free review. Okay, let's talk a bit more about content then and go into a bit more detail about how we can use content to make sure that we're getting qualified leads and banned qualified leads. So budget, authority, need, and time scale. So we need to make sure that any content we're producing fits the business's measurement of a qualified lead. So there are a few questions that we need to ask about current and future content. The first question is, are we targeting the right audience? Now, this is one of those questions where everyone intuitively says, yes, we are. But actually, we've got a service called a brand accelerator. What we do in these brand accelerators is we work with businesses to identify who their target audience is and basically just run a check across their websites to make sure that the content is really targeted to this target audience. We also do all sorts of things like customer core research, so digging in to find out what the customers value, what's most important to them, any objections that they had during the sign-up process, that type of thing. And we also end up inevitably doing a bunch of sort of branding tweaks as well to make sure that the brand resonates with this target audience. Anyway, one of the most common things that we see when we do this brand accelerator is that the business we're working with actually isn't that clear on their target audience, even if they think they are. This comes in two flavors. First flavor is the business thinks that they're really clear on the target audience, but if you ask two people in the business, they give you a completely different target audience. So individually, oh, they're clear on their target audience. Trouble is they're just clear on a different target audience. The second issue that we run into is that people are clear on their target audience, and then when they give us a list of their customers and we go and do some research with these customers and talk to them, we find out that actually the customers are completely different to the audience that they thought they were targeting. Now, the downside of this, of course, is that the content that they've been producing is targeted at like a phantom audience or a completely different audience for the one that they really need. So some common mistakes with B2B, they might be putting together complex guides when actually we talk to their customers and actually they have way less knowledge than the business might assume, or vice versa. They're putting forward really straightforward basic guides that their advanced technical audience is thinking, well, these are way too simple for us. So a nice exercise that you can do here is review the content that's converting well, not just the one that's getting, you know, the best traffic or the one that's getting the highest volume of conversions, but the content that's actually generating the highest conversion rate, and then compare that to the content that's generating the lowest conversion rates and see what the difference is with the angle and the positioning of that. Because often the stuff that's doing really well, we just need to do more of that, and we need to take that filter and apply it to the stuff that's doing less well. Also, things like CTAs, again, you can't really separate B2B SEO with conversion rate optimization and calls to action, because they are so important and so linked, right? No point getting qualified traffic to the website if the calls to action aren't generating leads from that traffic. The whole exercise is still pointless. You've just spent a whole bunch of time and money on SEO getting traffic and your server costs have gone up, right? So I'm looking at a blog here from Monzo. And Monzo is a digital bank. And they've had an idea of creating some B2B content on their site. So there's a post here I'm looking at. How to create a customer segmentation, which I don't think is right. I don't think our editorial team would have much fun with that. And what they've done is, this is basically like marketing advice. I'm going to be totally honest, it feels a little bit ChatGPT-ish. There might have been some editing, but it feels a bit ChatGPT-ish. The main reason that I have a problem with it, though, is that there are no CTAs at all. So Monzo, a digital bank, is presumably the strategy goes like, let's produce some content for marketers on how to create customer segmentation, because those marketers might be able to influence our choice of bank account. So if we get them onto our website, we can then convert them to become banking customers. I think that must be it. But honestly, I'm not sure that the strategy's quite there, but they're definitely unlikely to generate any leads from this whatsoever, because there are just no CTAs. It's a long old post. Actually, I stand corrected. There is one CTA. The last sentence of the whole blog, which is, I don't know, probably 15, 20 page scrolls, is, if you're interested in joining our team, visit our careers page. But why somebody searching for information on creating customer segmentation would be wanting to join a digital bank, honestly, I've got no idea at all. So this is like how not to do it, how not to embed CTAs and match intent. Going the other way though, another post that's ranking for this term, how to create customer segmentation, is SurveyMonkey. And they've produced a really good guide. I mean, it's a bit better than a Monzo one. It's not that much better. But the reason that this will be performing way better is that they've embedded CTAs. And SurveyMonkey also has a product which makes sense to publish this sort of content about, because SurveyMonkey helps people with market research, and customer segmentation involves market research. So they've got CTAs embedded through this post. The first one says, customer segmentation made easy. Identify and understand your ideal customers with SurveyMonkey audience. Learn more. Okay, it's qualified. You know, it's completely relevant to the content. It matches the audience intent. And they've got multiple CTAs echoed down the page. So it's really, really nice. It's going to generate far more leads than the Monzo one for all of the reasons that we've talked about. The next thing that we need to think about, though, when we're producing content is, does your content actually stand out in your industry? And what I mean by this is, does your content sound native and authoritative to the B2B audience, or does it sound like generic and AI generated? Because when we think about some of our most successful B2B clients, sometimes they're selling to a really technical audience, which is highly specialist. And if you go to that technical audience that's highly specialist with some generic rubbish, you immediately lose all of the credibility in the business, because they assume, well, this business is full of like basic people that don't really understand our world. So we need to make sure that we're writing at the right level, and that we have a tone of voice that really sort of matches. Another mistake that a lot of B2Bs make with their SEO strategy and their content strategy is that they write in this very bland and generic way, because they think, well, we're selling to businesses. Actually, we've actually found the complete opposite to be true, that you can still talk in a very personal way and a personal sort of individual tone of voice, which works just as well, because at the end of the day, we are still talking to people, right? This is a B2B podcast, but I can't speak corporate. So we don't talk corporate, we talk normal, right? So a personable tone of voice isn't something that has to be limited to B2C brands or companies that are led by a personal brand or a figurehead. It's actually something that any brand can adopt. For all of our clients, we work with them on a tone of voice document, and then we have an editorial team that scans through any piece of content we're producing for any of our clients and checks that content against that client's tone of voice to make sure it always sounds consistent with their business, because nothing will damage your credibility faster with a B2B audience than putting out stuff which is either basic, wrong, or just doesn't sound like you. The next thing we need to think about when we're producing content for SEO for B2Bs to generate qualified leads is how complicated our content is. A trap that B2Bs can often fall into, I'm thinking of one in particular, where they sold a very specific product. They were experts in manufacturing this product, real world leaders in manufacturing this product. And when you spoke to them, you realized that they were world leaders. The trouble is that their audience was not experts in this product at all. They were buying this product almost as a commodity. It wasn't quite a commodity sale because this business offered these products that were much more reliable and high quality. But this business, you know, their target customer were not experts. So their really technical content just went straight over the heads of their audience, who thought, wait, I must be in the wrong place. This just doesn't make sense to me. So we've got to remember that not everybody coming onto your website is an expert. They might be new to their industry. They might not realize they have a problem that needs fixing, particularly important if you're targeting top of funnel content. They might not realize that there's a better way of doing things. And it might be your job, your content's job, to educate them and give them that expertise before you start going super technical. So content is the ideal way to connect with people at their level. And what I'm not talking about is just dumbing down your content, right? Because like we said at the start, there might be technical people coming onto your site. There might be more entry-level people who are doing the research, who are building up a shortlist in order to pass to the technical people or the decision makers. But we just need to make sure we're writing at the right level. And if you haven't spoken to your customers for a while, or if you're in a marketing team that's quite siloed from your customers, it can be a really good idea to get some recording of sales calls or jump in on some account manager calls and make sure that actually you're properly calibrated to your target audience in this level here. Again, this can be particularly common in teams where the product, in businesses where the product team has a very loud voice and can influence the content, but maybe the sales team is a bit siloed and the product team always wins and the content ends up more technical than it needs to be, when actually the sales team might have been right all along. We need to also think, the final thing we need to think about when we're angling our content is these different touch points. With the sales cycle being longer, often longer in B2B, we need to be prepared to reach our target audience with more touch points. It's really unlikely that someone's going to engage with just one piece of content and then straight away convert. It does happen, but we need to not assume that that's going to be the case. So what we like to think about is the buyer journey. So how does somebody go from being problem aware, I know that I've got a problem, to solution aware, okay, I know that this software or this type of thing can help me, to being comparing different options to then finally making that choice? And at each of these stages, whether you use that framework or attention, interest, desire, action, whatever your model is, but at each of these stages, there are going to be particular searches that they're doing. There's going to be particular content topics that they are interested in. So when we're producing a content and SEO strategy, we need to think about reaching people at each of these different stages and producing stuff that's going to be relevant and get us in front of them. Because if we've got a 10 stage, 5 month sales cycle, if we can influence people at 6 or 8 of those different stages, we've got a great chance of getting that sale because we've been a large component of the audience's education. This is the model that Exposure Ninja was based on, right? When we first started, I wrote a book called How to Get to the Top of Google, which was really entry-level targeted. The first version was super entry-level. I actually wrote it for the average tradesperson, like a plumber or a heating engineer, and some of these people didn't even have email addresses. So I wrote it really basic. But the job of that was to educate people. So when they bought that book, they weren't thinking about buying a website and buying SEO. But by the end of that book, they were. And I'd been responsible for all of that education. So guess who they thought of when they were thinking about buying a website and getting some SEO? It was me, and it was Exposure Ninja. So that's obviously a bit of an accelerated version of the buyer journey. But actually, it might not be, because a book is a very long time. You know, some people take ages to read a book. So actually, if they pick up that book 10 times, that's essentially 10 different touch points that they've had. So think about the types of content that you're producing using that sort of example. All right, next up, we need to think about the sort of the on-site technical optimization of your website. Now, this is the type of thing that doesn't work massively well in podcast format, I'm not going to lie. But I'm going to give you some advice here. Now, first piece of advice is your website may have been fully optimized on-site at one point, but it might be worth reviewing that, okay? It's not uncommon for us to see a website that's been built nicely, it was optimized at the time of build, but 3 months later or 3 years later, when new pages have been added and, oh, we moved this content to this other URL, or, oh, we had an issue where some of the pages went down and their metas didn't get, you know, transferred or whatever. Sometimes you look at these sites and there's, you know, I was in London the other day, it was like a pigeon, and this pigeon was walking along. Pigeons obviously have 2 feet and they're supposed to have, I think, 3 toes on each foot. Anyway, this pigeon on one foot had a stump and on the other foot had 1 toe. And I'm thinking that's not dissimilar to a website that has been alive for like 3 or 5 years. These things get butchered and messed up to the point where actually they just need a good spring clean. I don't know what the spring clean equivalent for a pigeon that is missing some of its limbs is, but there you go. There's a metaphor that you didn't think you'd hit. Anyway, the point here is frequent health checks and frequent SEO health checks on your website is not the worst idea. Another thing that's often worth reviewing is the design of the site. What looked beautiful a few years ago probably starts to look a little bit out of date now. What looked beautiful 10 years ago or even 5 years ago now often looks plain offensive, right? So sometimes when a client sends us a website and they want to rank it, the first thing we say is actually this thing needs to look a bit prettier. There's no point sending this thing to the ball. It needs a bit of a tune up first, otherwise it's not going to convert the traffic that you drive to it. And that's just a waste of everyone's time. Another thing to keep an eye on, website speed. This is one of those things that just by default on its own just gets worse over time. Google is rewarding sites that load quickly, obviously. So you need to make sure that you're on the right side of that. And you can, of course, use PageSpeed Insights to do that. All right, let's talk about building links. Now, building links are a really important component of B2B SEO. The good news with link building for B2Bs is that if you're in a fairly uncompetitive space, you actually don't need huge volumes of links in order to move the needle. A lot of people think of backlinking and generating links as purely an SEO exercise, as purely a domain authority type exercise. But actually, I think backlinking, if it's done properly, can be a really good source of additional traffic and eyeballs, particularly with generative AI. Let me give you an example. I'm on a page here on selecthub.com, and this page is all about top CRM features and functionality list. This has obviously been designed to rank, and it does rank. And there are some screenshots from HubSpot that link back through to HubSpot. Now, if I was searching for CRM features and I really wanted to learn about CRM and think about whether a CRM was right for me, I might end up on this page. And then if HubSpot is being featured here, or Salesforce is being featured here with a link back to their website, well, guess what? If the screenshot looks pretty good, I might click through to that and go and have a look at it. Okay, so there's a backlink, and congratulations, that's a one in the backlink column for this month. We've got you a backlink. It's also a potential way of getting in front of people. The reason I think that this is even more important as we move more towards generative AI in search is I've been doing a lot of analysis of how to get ranking in ChatGPT. And one of the things that you'll notice with ChatGPT is when you ask for, you know, you ask a question like, I don't know, what's the best CRM software, for example? What it often does is it'll find a couple of pages that have a bunch of CRMs listed on them, and then it'll basically rewrite or select some information from those pages and display them in ChatGPT. So I think we're going to move to a point where actually getting featured on websites like this and on pages like this that are ranking high, this becomes a significant battleground for businesses, because we want to target people who are brainstorming the products or services that they're going to buy using generative AI. And if we're going to be featured in those answers, we need to be seen on plenty of websites. So there's like another angle there to link building and another, I guess, set of criteria for the publications and the websites that you might want to target. Now, Oh, we've spoken about building links before. The digital PR team here at Exposure Ninja creates amazing content, but they're also absolutely relentless about getting these types of links. And you do have to be pretty relentless. It helps to have lots of existing relationships, yes, of course, but you also have to be really relentless in following these things up because you get a fairly low success rate. And it's usually a bad use of someone who isn't a professional link builder's time to do this type of stuff because you get so many no's. And particularly if you don't really know what you're doing, then it's pretty demoralizing exercise, really. Okay, before we move on, I really want to talk about conversion rate optimization. We've spoken a little bit about CTAs and that type of thing, but we pitched this podcast as how to get qualified leads from B2B SEO. So I want to talk about the qualified bit. When you've got a CTA form, a call to action form on your page, B2B companies often go in sort of one or two directions with this. The first direction they go in is they ask for all the information they could possibly need under the sun. And it feels like you're filling out like a passport application or, you know, you're trying to move to America or something. Honestly, the amount of information you need to fill in is a real turnoff. Even if someone's qualified, they might not want to put in their phone number unless they know exactly what's going to happen to it. They might not be able to fill in some things. They might not know what their company revenue is, for example. So if you ask for too much information, you're going to turn people off. Of course, I know the reason that people ask for a lot of information is because the sales team say, well, yeah, but we need to know their revenue. We need to know this. We need to know that in order to qualify them. But often I think when it comes down to it, there are really a few key fields that allow the sales team to work out whether or not someone's qualified. And we can just ask for those, okay? Sometimes asking for revenue is good. Sometimes asking for the number of employees is better because actually people have a better read on that. And, you know, they're not so likely to get it wrong. Sometimes asking for budget is okay. But sometimes if you ask for budget, all you find is that people put either zero or infinite. They're either lowballing or highballing you because they don't know the question or they don't want to answer the question. So in that case, maybe asking for, you know, how many people are in this team or how many seats would you need might make more sense as a question to ask. So think really carefully about the minimum number of fields that you need to ask. Now, on the other side of things, sometimes people can just ask for too few fields, so the sales team can't even qualify the leads. They spend all of their time chasing their tails with a bunch of rubbish leads, whereas actually there was a few decent leads in there, but because they didn't show up as being decent, they didn't get prioritized. So sometimes you can do some stuff, you know, you can look at the URL of the email, you can look at the domain, and you can say, right, that looks like a good potential client for us. But it's worth talking to the sales team and just saying, look, if each field cost you personally £200 to put in this form, how many fields are you adding and what are they, right? Right, play a little game with them. Like, each field does have a cost. It does have a cost in suppression of conversions, but then it all can also have a benefit as well. So let's think about that. It's great having loads of traffic, but it's not so great if it's converting or if it's converting so many leads that your team are completely flooded and can't really use it. So this type of conversion rate optimization, really, really important. And it's something that you're going to want to review over time as well. This is another of those areas that can just bloat itself into being not particularly useful. Every time you get a junk lead coming through, you add a new field to the form to try and suppress that lead from coming through in the future. And, you know, you end up with something that's quite inelegant. Okay, so how do you know that all of this is working? Well, I'll tell you how not to test if all of this is working. And that is when you're driving a digital marketing campaign, particularly B2B, particularly if you're focused on lead quality, it can be so tempting, and sometimes it's all we've got, to measure the campaign's success or failure purely based on the number of conversions showing in, say, GA4, right? The number of conversions is sometimes correlated with the value of the leads, but not always. Of course, it's an important metric. Of course, it's a kind of predictor of how well things are working. But if quality is way more important than quantity, you also need that live feedback. I don't think that there's any perfect way to do this. There are some ways that you can obviously attach the, you know, qualification criteria in your CRM to GA4 and you can feed through different types of conversion, all that type of stuff. Or you can use conditional form fields that, based on the quality of the answer, send people through to different thank you pages, and you can then tag those thank you pages as being higher quality or whatever. But a lot of the time, the best way of judging quality is actually just to talk to the people who are processing or who are working these leads. Talk to the sales team. Just get their anecdotal feedback. How good are these leads that are coming through? If you can, match the lead with the traffic source in GA4, so you got a bit of feedback there. And you can also sometimes work out which page people have come through to. And if you can spot some patterns with people, high quality leads coming through a high quality page, you can then go re-optimize the rest of your pages based on that feedback. So I hope you found that useful. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast or follow it or whatever. Drop us an email if you've got any questions. I think you can email podcast@exposureninja. If that doesn't work, if it bounces back, then drop me an email personally, tim@exposureninja.com. Don't forget to request your free website of marketing review if you haven't already. Have a lovely week, and I'll talk to you soon.